welcome everybody to the Committee of the Whole meeting of Walton Hills, Tuesday, October 8th, 2019, at 7 p.m. First order.
Councilperson Lindell.
Present.
Brenner Miller.
Here.
Allen.
Here.
Kamuski.
Here.
Nielsen.
Here.
Spitznagle.
Here.
All of council present, along with our fiscal officer Katie Iaconis and our law solicitor John Montello. Item number three, persons having business before council. And you, we do allow the audience or residents and anybody here to also talk between the agenda items too. So if there's something comes up and you want to say something about the items. If everybody's good, I'd like to, oh, come out to the mic, Sean.
Good evening, Sean McCormick, 18850 Alexander Road. I do see it on the agenda for today, but I'm hoping for more explanation into the Egbert Road horse main job. It just seems like we dissected other pieces of last week's agenda to excess, and then I do understand there was a recommendation by Sherman Valley Engineering to use terrace construction, but with the bids being so different, and the bid sheet, the summary sheet being to someone that hasn't looked at something like this in a very long time, all over the road, so many different pieces for each bid. I guess I'm looking, and I know a few other people are looking for some more explanation into the selection.
Okay, and I think since we, I'll say where we're at with that. Last weekend when we presented to council asked to get a letter from our engineers, which is Sugar Valley Engineering, which Don Sheehy is here, who's one of the principals of that company. And I talked to him and Joe Gelati, who's the engineer who does most of the engineering for the village, and asked for that letter. And they said he'd rather come here and explain. So we do have Don here, and he is going to explain that here tonight. That whole process that was started, gosh, I think we started that, we applied for funds last June even, and have talked about that. So, but as far as the quotes, yeah, Don's here tonight, so he can answer any questions. That's, they do the bid process, and so we'll let him answer. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay. Well, I'd like to welcome Dr. Andrea Selico. She's the Bedford School District Superintendent. She's here this evening to talk about the infrastructure of the Bedford School District, the buildings and.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate you giving me some time this evening to speak. It sort of morphed into my initial agenda, which was to talk specifically about Chanel, to clarify some things. I think there's been some information in the community that's been miscommunicated, or some people have been maybe misinformed and not lacking some of the facts. So I came, I wanted to come this evening to clarify some of that, but also to have a chance to give you a little bit of a history of how, where we're at right now in the process in terms of building new schools. I've been to all the council meetings in Bedford, Bedford Heights, Oakwood, and this is my final stop. So again, it came on the heels of some articles and some information that's out there about Chanel. So I want to just, if I may, again, start with the history. So we've created a strategic plan in the district shortly after I arrived there. This is my fifth year as superintendent. I'm a resident in the district. I live in Oakwood Village. But we started the strategic plan process as a recommendation from the board in 2017, January of 2017, and since then we've created subgroups, and so one of our subgroups, our committees, was around building new schools, was around finances and infrastructure, as you mentioned, facilities. So we adopted that plan in May of 2017, and then what was birthed from that was some different conceptual ideas around what could happen regarding new schools in terms of locations, grade configurations, etc. So that committee, which was comprised of mostly school folks, but we did offer it and open it up to others, but it was just a small working group that came up with six or seven different visions. And we put those out to the public around December of 2017. We had, in November and December actually, we had meetings in which we held at the high school and at Heskett where we presented those different concepts to folks to get your brain kind of wrapped around the idea and to brainstorm some other ideas of what you would like to see. And at the time, we presented different ideas. And I also spoke with the mayors. I meet with the mayors, just for your information, regularly, four times a year, quarterly. I've been doing that since I've taken the helm here in Bedford. I also meet with the clergy four times a year, as well as a superintendent's advisory council, in which we invite, open it up, and I think we can then open it up to people in your community, and we appreciate your presence at those meetings. So we discuss a number of these things around facilities is one big topic. So in November, December of 2017, we did present those ideas. The board then entered into an agreement with the Ohio Facilities, you'll hear this term quite a bit if you read our literature, OFCC, which is the Ohio Facilities Construction Commission, and they have very specific requirements in how they do things and how they build new schools. They completed their assessment of our six buildings in May of 2018. So they came in, looked at every single building. It's a very thick document. They went over it with us. And at that time, they deemed that a number of our schools qualified to be rebuilt as opposed to renovated. At the same time, approximately around the same time, in April of 2018, we purchased Chanel for $1.4 million with the vision that we could potentially use that as a campus setting. As you are aware, our Board of Education, as well as our high school, sits across Northfield from Chanel. And that property, for your information as well, is 33 acres. It was constructed in 1957, so it's approximately the same age of our buildings. Our buildings range, aside from Central, which is over 100 years old, many of them range from the 55 to 65 years old. So Chanel falls right in that same category. Chanel was vacant since 2013. I've been in it myself several times. As well as my peers, and I should mention I have with me this evening our assistant superintendent, Dr. Johnson, and our director of special education, Rashida Smilek, so I appreciate them being here. They have made some walkthroughs with me, much to their chagrin at times, because it's not always that fun to walk through, especially as you get to the third floor.
And also we have our former board member here.
Yes, of course, I don't know if I should point that out, but yes, Debbie Kosak, who's
one of our residents.
Yes, she is, and much appreciated by the Board of Education. That building is 165,000 approximately square feet, and there is asbestos that's been proven throughout the building. So it is littered with it. We know that. The cost to demolish and abate it is approximately $1.7 million, much of which comes from the abatement itself. It's not the demolition that costs money. You're talking around $1 million, if not more, for, and that's an estimate, depending on when they get in there, to abate it with all the asbestos that's in there. So that's where the cost really comes. So regardless of what you do with that building, whether you would demolish it, I'm sorry, if you would renovate it, you would still have a huge cost to abate it, and you probably have to put even more money in, because if you're putting children into a building, you want to make sure that you have that done right. So while I said the cost is $1.7 million, we were worked in collaboration with the City of Bedford, who wrote a grant to the land bank for $300,000, and there was a deadline, and that's what caused some of the confusion. I want to be clear about this, that we were under time constraints. We haven't even started our master planning process. And I think people became confused because they heard of us, of the board, having to make some decisions around Chanel. It really, though it's part of the plan, it's also separate. We needed to make a decision, the timeline, because of the money. We could forego the $300,000, but we didn't think that was wise taking into consideration the taxpayers, certainly. And so when we gathered all the information, which I'll share with you momentarily, the board thought it was in the best interest as a whole, overall, to demolish it and to take advantage of that $300,000 that would go towards the demolition, leaving the board with approximately $1.4 million left to abate and demolish. The cost to insure and maintain that building, if we were to keep it and keep it vacant and just maintain it, it could be $70,000, it could be $100,000 a year. One, for the big cost being insurance, and secondly, your bills. And we had also we had a boiler go that was $90,000 to replace. So to put a boiler in a building that we don't plan on using, you know, is a cost. And we had to do it because we would have had those in place. This happened right before the winter of last year. And so we put it in, but now the good part of that is, and we made sure of this, is that we can use that in another building. We will be relocating that to, I believe, Columbus. The Board of Education retained Venn Design Architecture and the architecture firm, and they're a pre-bond architect to verify the assessments that the Ohio Facilities Commission did. So what they did is they reviewed the work of the Ohio Commission, and then they came up with their own analysis. And at the end of all of that, it turned out that all six buildings qualify for new construction. And the way in which that happens is there's a two-thirds rule. So if any building costs more than two-thirds to renovate than to build new, they won't give you money. Because they're saying these buildings are too old, it surpasses the two-thirds, we're just going to give you money to build new. So that's where we were at with Chanel as well. Ohio Facilities Commission did not assess that building, and this is also another point to be clarified, because we have too much space, and this is what I don't think the message got out either. So I say that, and you're going to question me on the other side saying, well, why would you purchase it? We qualify for approximately 400,000 square feet based on the enrollment that we have, which is about 3,200 students. So the state is not going to, we have 700,000 square feet approximately on hand now. So what they're saying is they will not come in and give us money to, let's say, rebuild our high school as is. That building services up, not even 1,100 students, about 1,050. It had 2,500, some of you that went to Bedford Schools know there were 2,500 students or so just under that at one time in that building. So that naturally tells you that we have too much square footage for the amount of students we have. So that the state won't come in and give us money to rebuild that building as is. They're going to make us make it smaller, which makes perfect sense, and it needs to be. So that was part of the reason in which they would not give money for Chanel to renovate. So if we chose to renovate Chanel and get it to the standards as is now, and that doesn't mean we keep the same size, but just for comparison's sake, it would cost approximately $30 million to renovate. Now, if we wanted to rebuild that building, it would cost us around $42 million. And these were all verified through an architect. These are not numbers we plucked out of the air. And so now you take that $42 million and you put towards that the 21% that the state will give us to build new schools, and you deduct that, you're at about a $3 million difference to have renovate versus rebuild. And it doesn't make sense to do that. You can have a brand new structure and everything from ground up brand new as opposed to this renovation. And I would add that in my experience, as not as a superintendent, but as assistant superintendent, I have been involved in two processes regarding new schools, from pre-bond, actually through construction in Euclid. We built four new schools. And I've been in Cleveland Heights under a renovation and facilitated that. And we were renovating middle school and high school. So I have experience through this process a couple times. And some people don't get to do this ever once in their career. And this is my third time that we're exploring this. So it's kind of exciting, but it's also a very, very tiring time as well, but exciting. So with that, the state, again, I want to clarify, would give us 21%, and that's based on your property values, and there's a calculation that the state does. We were at 20%, they reassess it every year, we moved up 1%, which is a good and bad problem to have, right? Because it tells you your property values are going down. But that's where we're at right now. That number could change by the time we go to build, and we hope that it would go up. The Chanel building, just a little bit more, was built, as I said, in 57. And if we were to renovate that building, we would need to put in a new fire alarm system, security systems, windows and doors, heating and ventilation, roof and drainage, electrical technology, plumbing, flooring, not to mention all the issues associated with ADA accessibility. So that building, though it has some nice elements to it, really is not designed or equipped to provide our students with the best education. And hearing all of what we have to do to it kind of makes some sense. So that's really the update on Chanel. I would just add that this is all the pre-bond phase. So this is, we're trying to put together a plan of what the future would look like. So as of right now, we are actually going to start our master planning process and focus groups. And I would like to throw out some dates for you to consider, which is the first one is a community meeting on October 24th. And that will be at 6:30 at our high school. In our north house, we'll have some signs to make it easy for you. And then on October 30th, we'll have one at noon. We're trying to accommodate different people's schedules, the differences in schedules, and that will be at the Bedford Heights Community Center. And, oh, you know what? I apologize. The 24th, we moved it. It's going to be at Heskett Library. I apologize. The 24th at 6:30 is at Heskett. Our other meetings at the high school. We switched those. I'm sorry. And the last thing I would just add, you know, I don't try to hide behind anything or try to cover anything up as it relates to the school report card. And I will tell you this, yes, we have a D, as do many of our interim peers, and that's not, again, to excuse anything, just to give you some information. The report card has been proven over and over again to be flawed. We've been encouraged by the state superintendent himself, by legislators, by our lobbyists, to encourage residents not to pay attention to that report card. And, you know, I am not against being held accountable, and we need to be held accountable, and there has to be some way to do that. And if testing is the way to do it, that's fine. I just want to make sure that we are playing on a level field and that the assessments that they're giving are true and accurate. I'm not a statistician, but we do know that there are many flaws in the ways in which they're measuring schools. So much so that one measure on the test prepared for success is a measure that 510 out of 612 or 13 districts received a D or an F. If 510 districts are failing, and if you look around at some of our neighboring peers, you'll see that some of them were receiving those grades. And so on. There's been other measures that have proven to be the same. So we continue to fight. We continue to try to do the best we can for our students. And I don't want in any way, as I've heard this comment, that our students don't deserve new schools because we have a D on the report card. And that's very disappointing for me to hear as a superintendent, as an educator, as who's passionate about helping our students learn. And I would just ask you to consider, you know, when we do go for this levy, just to take all that into consideration, because our kids do deserve the best. If you look around, our peers, we're the exception. We are the exception. If you look around, new buildings are being constructed all the time, including Maple, Warrensville, Richmond Heights, Drexville, Garfield. They're all doing it. So I don't see why our Bedford students would be any different, and that they shouldn't have those opportunities. So I leave you with that, and I do appreciate your time. I would be glad to entertain any questions that you have for me. Mayor,
yeah. Hey, Council, anybody have any questions?
Yeah,
I'll open up to the rest.
Mayor.
Go ahead.
First of all, welcome, and it's a pleasure to have all of you here, and it's an honor. Thank you, Dr., for being here. I do have a question. I'm still fuzzy on why you, if your student enrollment is down and your buildings are too big now, why did you buy Chanel in the first place?
Very good question. So one of the things that we want to do, and I didn't mention, but we have six buildings right now. We want to consolidate to four. For obvious reasons, efficiency as well as to right size. We have overcrowding in our elementaries. If anyone's visiting Glendale or Central, we are busting out of the seams. And so much so that we have enough to fill two more preschool classrooms, but I could not open them up because we don't have space. So conversely, the high school has plenty of space. So what the intention was is to have the campus, and one of the visions was to have the high school and the middle school across from one another, to make that nice campus setting, and there's so many advantages, educationally, efficiency-wise, for our students to have that. And then we would look at eliminating a couple of our sites, and I didn't go into this detail, but Glendale and Central are landlocked. They do not have enough land, acreage, to build two new buildings. They're just simply not big enough. So we would be entertaining the Heskett site and most likely the Columbus site for two other buildings. And then Carroll would be the look probably to sell. That's one option.
And I just said, Mayor,
go ahead, Mayor.
Just a comment about the report cards and stuff. And, I taught very briefly. I was a substitute teacher in the Cleveland system, very briefly. I know that there are issues with that report card and how it's administered, the funding that the schools get. That it almost forces schools to teach two tests and things like that. And it's not always the school's fault. It's politically correct to blame the schools, but a lot of accountability has to be placed on the parents and being involved with the children that you see in other systems. And, you know, I know that's very politically incorrect to say, but everybody that knows me knows I'm very politically incorrect, and I think that's true. I agree with you that those report cards aren't all 100% a reflection of the schools and the teachers in them.
I appreciate that. Just I'll add briefly, we do believe in partnerships with parents. We do know that we are struggling in terms of our students' emotional well-being. And this is everywhere. I don't care what district you're looking at. You turn on TV, you're looking at suicides, you're looking at bullying. I don't care where you're at. So we have added an additional 7 people regarding social emotional learning and supports. So we have social workers now in the schools, mental health specialists, and behavior specialists. Those were all added this year to try to address those needs of our students. Because if they're not coming equipped to learn because of what they're internalizing or what they're experiencing at home or what they've seen on TV or in social media, they're not going to come in ready to learn. And so we're trying to get ahead of that and providing the supports that we can. And I would add that we are adding these additional services. The governor helped us out in this with the wraparound service money. You might have seen in the biennial budget that was added. We were the recipients of $640,000, which was great. And I do want to also add that I've been here 5 years. We've not had a levy. You passed the levy for operating right before I arrived, and that's actually great for superintendents. We know how much work's involved, as you do when you're going for your bond issues and such. But we may go on the ballot next year, but that, I want to point out, that would be 6 years without a levy. And I'm just speaking from 24 years or so in education, and I don't recall ever being in a district that has stretched 6 years and been able to add services to what we offer. So I just want you to also to know that tidbit, because I think it's very important. We're very proud of that, that we've been able to stretch our dollars that long.
Anybody else on council have anything?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes,
go. Okay.
Yeah, Sarah, do you know if there's a levy being contemplated or not?
For ours?
Yeah.
So we're thinking of operating levy maybe next year. We still have some great reserves, and we're ahead of the game. We're still operating well. We're very solvent. But it may be that we have to go next year. If we go for a bond issue, what we're trying to do is, in being fully transparent, is gauge when the bond issue would come. Because it is a few years out, probably a couple years out anyway, of when we would go for a bond issue to build new schools. And as you're aware, there's separate pots of money, which we have to also explain to folks that we need money to operate the schools, and then if we build new schools, that's a whole separate entity in which we can't touch to operate. So there's going to be some educating people on that. But yeah, there's going to be a levy in the near future, one way or another.
Yeah, I was wondering if we knew, if you had an idea of how much of a levy, what the levy is going to be. I mean, obviously, you've done a lot of homework on this, so there should be.
Yeah, we have maintained, and prior to coming in and looking at the history, I've been very, very impressed with whoever's been the previous superintendent, the treasurer. We've maintained around 4.9 mils. We've been able to do that, and we know that mils are only decreasing. So where it was $1 million at one time, a mill is now $600,000. So that in and of itself, to say that we want to stay around that number, because we recognize going higher is difficult to do. We don't have a firm number just yet, but that's sort of what we're trying to stay around.
Denny, did you have
I'm okay.
I thought you were done. I'm sorry about that. Anybody else have any?
Just like to say thank you for coming, all of you. I've been to the school many times for meetings and social things, and I think the teachers are wonderful there, and I'm glad that you've got these different people that you brought in now to help the children, because I think it starts in the home, and I think that's important, and I think parents need to get involved in being there, as the schools do, and different things they can come to. Teacher and to students, being sort of a teacher in that. They need to be partners with the teachers too. And I appreciate what you do. And I'm glad that you've been 3 times with this situation. I know it must be, but it's like it's good to have somebody that has some knowledge. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Mayor.
I have a question. You may not be able to answer it, and I think I may already know the answer. Back in the old days, they used to have cosmetology, auto repair, shop, all that got moved out to separate entities like Cuyahoga Valley. Are they ever going to bring that back?
Well, I can't answer that. So we actually, we have it. We have a consortium. So when I, the first couple years I was here, we partnered with Maple Heights. They've been our partner in career. So we use the word vocational a lot. It's career and technical education is the newer term, but when I was in school, it was vocational. And so we've expanded since I've been here. Since I came from Cleveland Heights, and knowing the struggles they've had in filling courses, we then came together as superintendents. We've added Cleveland Heights, Warrensville, Shaker Heights, Maple, and Bedford, our five-district compact. And we have 30 choices for students in regard. We offer all of that. We have two cosmetology offerings for students. We have two or three auto techs. We have pharmacy. We have STNA, which is nursing. We have accounting. We have marketing. We have business. We have digital media. We're looking at adding a... they're looking at adding a manufacturing, and they have a construction at Maple Heights. So it's something that, because it's not on site, I think we have some courses on site. We do have an auto tech, but because we don't have all of them on site, people lose sight of that or lose track. I think we're not offering it, but our students are able to go to other schools and take advantage of those courses. Because we recognize everyone's not going to go to college, and they need a skill. And many of our students take advantage of it. We have a couple hundred students that do take advantage of those courses.
Well, that's
paramedics
great.
Is another one.
That's great, because I think too many people are, it's kind of forced to go to college, and college is not for everyone, and we need skilled labor out there. We need people who can work with their hands and get a job. So, good to know. Thank you.
Sure. I'm going to give the residents a minute. You'll be the first one, Karen. Any council?
You'll hear me. Trust me.
No, I'm going to have you come up. I am going to, because last time I started, and then you need to say yourself. Council, everybody,
good? Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You might have to
feel. Yes, I'll just put my hands. Right. I know how this works, so stand by.
Doctor, thank you very much for coming up, speaking to us. Starting at pre-K to senior year, how many Walton Hills children, without putting you on the spot, are in the system?
So my recollection, I don't need to be on mic. My recollection last year, I don't have this year's numbers, and it's funny, we were literally just talking about this today. I said, I got to get this year's numbers. 39 was the last number I had heard, so that was, I believe that was last year at some point in the year. Naturally, we lose students, but it was approximately 39.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Anybody else have any questions? Mary Alice?
Because they know it's a teacher. They must send it all to the principal's office.
That's right. Well, thank you very much for coming. I have a question about, and I was really glad to hear about the technical opportunities of vocational, whatever it's called. But I wonder if you've ever given any effort to try to include our school in the Cuyahoga vocational campus. I feel that there would be so much more opportunity for our students to actually have a more profitable career if they could take part in some of those really great culinary courses, and you know, they have so many others.
So if I may, I did forget to mention too, since you mentioned culinary, we just partnered, this is our first year with Tri-C. So we are sending, we have four Bedford students that are attending Tri-C, and they will actually end up with college credit in culinary. So that's another one that we added. So we're continuing to look for new opportunities. And we briefly explored that, and I didn't dig deeply enough, so this is really not a great answer, but there were some concerns attached to how they're funded. I think they have levies, which would mean, I think, another levy for the community, and there's some other work that would have to be done than just joining their consortium. Is that correct? So I see some nods, so I might be at least half correct. But I do recall that being part of the issue, which is why we decided to do this other compact on our own. We're offering many of the similar classes, but the disadvantage for us is that we're on five different schedules, five different transportation. It is a challenge, I'm not going to lie. It comes with some challenges for us, but still offering those opportunities for our students. Thank you. I'm going to revisit that just because I should have.
Thank you. Anybody else have any more questions? Go ahead, Joseph.
At the end of the year, you sent us this pamphlet that showed the students, that these students are going to this college, these students are going to this college, and then we have a group of unknown. My feeling is, I believe in 4 years, maybe these students should be counseled into some direction, because not all students are college bound. I know when I graduated many years ago, very few of us went to college, but we did go into the trades. My husband went into the trades. He worked his way up to management level at Ford in engineering. So what are you doing about getting, so there's no student unknown, so they all have a goal in their life, because I don't think this is quite fair for them to leave college and have no idea where they're going to go. So can we continue on, or have a better program for trades?
Some of those unknowns that you see there are actually, they're undecided on where they're going to college, so that's why it says unknown. And they're still in the process of some college applications, because when we start asking them, it's actually earlier in the spring, about the summer. It takes a lot. It's with kids, sometimes we have to, it's like pulling hair, trying to get that information. But they do have counselors that they work with. We have four counselors in high school that are counseling them in different pathways, and every student has a pathway. We have a form that every child gets, and we're tracking them and working with them on what they want to do and getting them in the right direction that they want to.
But I still see that there's an incentive that goes out to everybody, and it just shows that they were unknown. Maybe we can work on getting them into a direction when they graduate, because it's rough around here now when I graduate.
Sure. Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions? Thank you,
Andrea.
Thank you. Thank
you very much.
Welcome to City of our meeting. Everybody else is. Our next item is, one other question. We'll be able to, electronically, you'll send us the dates too, correct? Just send me the dates.
We will get invitations, personal invitations.
Great, thank you. We're writing them down, but you know how that goes.
Yeah, I do. Well, definitely, you'll probably be bombarded with them.
Item number six, we have that in front of us. We do have Don here to kind of answer any questions anybody has on council, and then we can, any questions for the audience. Don, if you want to come up to the mic and introduce yourself, and go from there.
Thank you, Mayor. Just wanted to give you a little bit of an update. We did. I'm Don Sheehy. I'm the president of Sugar Valley Engineering. We're the village engineer, and we've been village engineers since 2002, three, something.
A long time. How many communities do you represent?
Our company handles 18 towns and a couple of water districts as well. So we most of them are Cuyahoga County, but we do have some Lorain County, we have Avon, and we have Brunswick, which is Medina County, and Summit County. So four counties, but the bulk of them are at the county. So this is our turf. The Egbert Road Project, Mayor, as briefly mentioned, we originally applied for funding for this in 2018, about June, we submitted the funding application. We were able able to get funding from Regional Sewer District to move forward with this project. Funding actually officially was in place January 1 of 2019. So we were able to go forward with plans, specifications, since it's the same as force main, and has to be approved by county, the Ohio EPA, and also Regional Sewer District on the funding mechanism. The project itself, once plans were done, we put it out to bid. We received three bids on the project. I can tell you right now, all three companies are capable of doing the work. So we're very happy that we actually had three bidders on the project. We have Terrace Construction is the apparent low bid. The number is substantially lower than the other two contractors. It's a bit of an anomaly, so it doesn't happen that often that the number is low. We figured our number, our estimate was high when we were asking for funding. The funding application, and we wanted to make sure that we would not be the low bidder on the project. We had a number which are a little bit artificially high because you never know exactly market fluctuations, material supply costs, things like that go up and down. So we wanted to have a little bit of cushion. So our estimate was on the high side. Like I said, we got three competitive bids. Terrace substantially lower than the second low bidder. The most of the unit prices are comparable in terms of, you know, sometimes contractors tinker around with where they want to put some of their internal costs. And like the first item that we have clearing and rubbing, we have one guy that is $1,000 for that, the other two are $25,000 to $31,000. Probably a more accurate number to get to. So, but the big difference there on all of them, you know, the one that kind of sticks out is the actual sanitary force main. So Terrace Construction is a variable number. It's extremely competitive. When we got the bids, we, you know, let them know that, you know, you're quite a bit lower. They certainly were aware of the other bids when we opened the bids. They stick by the number. They're bonded, they're licensed. They have a bid bond to bid on this work. They have a performance bond to physically perform the work. Process, there's no, we're not using inexpensive labor, it's all prevailing wage labor. So this is men working on the job, they maintain prevailing competitive wages. They just have a low number, and we're the beneficiary of that lower price. So Terrace, like the other two contractors, they've been in business for a long time. They do a tremendous amount of pipe work, so there's a lot of water line replacement work. Directional drilling, directional boring, which is the bulk of this contract, is an emerging technology. More and more companies are going into it. It's becoming more competitive. We are seeing numbers drop. This could be the new benchmark for where we should be bidding these things. It's a competitive price. So I think we're fortunate that we have the price. I have no hesitation in recommending Terrace Construction to do the work. They've been in business for a long time. They do great work. Never had a problem with their work. Or the other contractors. Really, we can't go wrong with any of these, but it's that's a little bit price, and that's who we recommend. So, it's a good situation to be in.
Mr. Mayor?
Go ahead, Mark.
A couple questions. The one, the force main, as you mentioned, is the lowest part,
right,
thing that sticks out. Pieces, parts, they're the same as the other.
All the materials are specified in the specs, so they are obligated to provide the exact same materials, same quantity, same, every bit of it's the same. And the specification, when they go ahead and move forward with the contract, they'll have to submit what they call shop drawings, but it gives you the spec on all the pipe and everything. We have very specific language in our contract documents, and they have to follow.
In your letter, you suggested the alternate bid, also including money for that.
Yes.
What exactly is that? Because I see two, you know, 3A, you suggested 3A and 4A, and
right,
they're just the same as the top. I don't, what does that exactly mean?
There's a specific area where the boring is particularly difficult, and there's a couple of ways to potentially, there's a portion of the force main that was more difficult than the rest of it. And we broke it out because we didn't want that to dictate the unit price for the entire job.
If
it was going to be incredibly expensive to do that piece, we may have decided, we made a value choice to say, let's leave that piece in place. Let's not install that particular piece because it's so difficult. That last, it's about 160 feet, so that last little bit was a really difficult, degree of difficulty was up there. So we did want to isolate that price so that we didn't end up with a unit price that was out of whack for the entire job.
And one more question.
Go ahead.
As far as the funding, that funding of 50-50 includes the alternate bid specs?
Yes,
too.
Yes, it does.
Includes that.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, when we went about bidding it, obviously we didn't know what the numbers were going to come out, so we wanted some flexibility, and you know, if we were going to break out a piece of it, let's say they increased the unit price of the entire force main because it's this little bit of difficult section. And then we decided not to do that piece. The only savings would be minus the 160 feet. By isolating it, we're able to control the cost really on the whole job. The easier part, we have a lower unit price, and then this last bit, we have a higher.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead,
there. I spoke to their surety bond underwriter today for Cincinnati Insurance. So, Sean, they had 30 days to withdraw their bid. You have 30 days. If you're the low bidder and you figure out you've left out something important, you can go to the owner and request to have your bid withdrawn. They haven't done that. And without compromising financial position, they can get bonds in multi-million dollar denominations. And I was telling them about the one unit price being somewhat lower. He said they could have an abundance of inventory. They can be working in a neighboring community. And they figured, well, we're right there. Let's bid this other small job. This is very easy for them. And all things being equal, after what I heard from him, and I would say, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with them at all because they are a top-notch outfit, and Cincinnati Insurance is an A-rated carrier who bonds them, and they've been with them for 30 years. And they did the, I believe they did the Euclid Avenue Corridor piping project, how many years ago, multiple bonds at once. So I think they can handle a $159,000 job for us.
Yeah, you make some excellent points. And again, we don't know necessarily what competitive advantage one contractor might have over the others. It's a little bit of a gambler sale. Maybe they could have made more profit on this and given us a higher number, but they've chosen a particular method. And we also are seeing, you know, I've been doing this now for 30 years as well. So we also are seeing a lot of contractors, not as many. 10 years ago, we might have gotten 8 to 10 bidders on this project. But people are busy. Sometimes the number that gets thrown out there to these bids is a little bit higher. Now we got somebody who said, I really want to work. My guy's busy over the winter. Whatever the case may be, this contractor's given us a low number. It's complaints that it's competitive, and I think it's something that we should, I have no issue with recommending for the project.
As we say, they give you a number, throw it against the wall, and see if it sticks. So these guys are busy, so they up their price, and, you know, I mean.
Any other councilman? Go ahead, Mark.
I just like to clarify. I wanted the letter for that amount of money, not from Don. I know Don knows his business. It was from the company itself. Say, this is our bid, and you believe this is, you know, that this is the right, you know, so there's nothing that they can't come back in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, they've signed a contract. So the contract documents have that language in there. This is our bid, we represent this is our number. So they've really already done that, and that is our Bible for this project. That is their book. They've signed it. They've got the bid bond is associated with that document. They will have to produce some additional documents once we give them notice of award. But all that documentation does come to us. It's probably just on every project. So that's always happening. But your concern is a fail, but that is happening.
Since it's such a low bid,
right.
So made a mistake.
You know, the mistake thing, you know, we can speculate. But I've seen it. It happens twice every 5 years, somebody will publish a map. Made a mistake. They forgot to include the labor portion in the material portion and the blue. I've had, in the past 10 years, I've probably had four or five of those things. It's not pleasant to be a contractor because they have to get there and back out of it. They have a 72-hour, they can just basically say, we made a scrivener's error in our calculations, we're withdrawing our bid. And they don't really punch for that. It's happened. This contractor will give them the opportunity to do that. So, no, it's a good number. So, as your engineer, I'm recommending this is what you should go with. There's really nothing else to discuss about this. Give us a number, following the process, they're bonded, they're going to pay a prevailing wage, we have a tight spec on the materials. There is no risk on this contract that's any more or less than any other contract. There's nothing magical about this number being a little bit lower than the other number. Really, if there was no risk, it's any different than any other contract I would have.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Go ahead, Bert.
John, a couple times I've been involved in projects like this, and this really is not that unusual. I mean, it's like you said, making sure that you guys have work, and if you're in the area or whatever, but it happens. I mean, I've dealt with companies. $350,000 projects, and guys come much, much higher. You look at it and you wonder, what are they going to use for material? They're using the same material. They're using the same type of labor. I mean, labor being, they're equal. I mean, you're not, this company is a legitimate company, Josephine. They're bonded. I mean, we're protected. They have a contract with us. So, I mean, I know you're worried, but you shouldn't be. I mean, you have an expert here.
Mr. Mayor?
Right.
Mr. Sheehy, so if I'm understanding correctly, if for some reason they start this project and something is out of whack and there's an additional $100,000 cost, the company covers that or the village is stuck with that?
Any contract that the village undertakes, if there's an unforeseen condition, something that wasn't anticipated, I'll give an example. When we were doing the Edgar Road water main years ago, we discovered an ancient bridge foundation. The contractor was digging through the ground from a bridge that was abandoned in the 1940s. So it was there. The contractor found it when he was putting water line in, and he added an extra for that work. Okay? It was something that nobody could have known. The village didn't know about it. The contractor didn't know about it. Whoever didn't know about it didn't tell us. So it was there. There was a cost associated with doing that additional work. We tracked it as in hours and materials, type of materials, and it was an extra cost of, let's say, $15,000. Not pleasant, but you tracked what the work is, and you acknowledge that there's something there that nobody knew about, and move on. That can exist in any contract. So whether you're giving it to the low bidder, the second low, the third low, there is always that risk. It's underground activity. There are times when things get run into. The water line's supposed to be here. It's 10 feet further away, and then you have a conflict. If something's deeper than it's supposed to be, that's always a possibility. But then the process and the contract is set up. We have unit prices to cover all the work that they do under contract that meets the contract they will do for that unit price. If they do run into some type of conflict, track it. If it's a legitimate claim, document the hours, we'll document the time, material, whatever they've spent to do that additional work, and then we present that to council as a potential for the next term. And there's language in our contracts right now that covers that possibility, because it could happen on any job, and it does happen on occasion. So we're comfortable that we're as well protected against this contractor as any other. We can't say, well, we ran into something, we're going to charge you $100,000. Now, here's the material, here's the labor it took to do the work, here's what it's worth.
Okay.
And that way we control the cost so it doesn't get out of control.
So along with that, if there was an additional cost,
yes,
we do not get any more of the grant money.
The grant, unfortunately, because we have the fairly high estimate of cost, the grant still covers half of upwards of $570,000. So we're only getting half of whatever the number is. We would have to exceed the entire grant before we really see any difficulty getting funding. We will provide this information to the grant provider, and they will acknowledge that we have this cost. Any other costs that come up, there's other costs that the village has as far as engineering, inspection, and testing, and things like that. And if there's a cost overrun, that grant will still cover half.
Okay.
For quite a while until we have to worry about it.
Okay, and one other thing I wanted to ask. You guys are the ones responsible for writing up the specifications that the contractors bid on then.
That's right.
So ultimately, if there's something wrong, it falls back to you guys.
if there's a problem with the design.
With the design.
Sure.
If we need a design error, then yeah, we have professional liability insurance that the village requires us to carry. It's up to like $200. And our insurance carrier would not be happy with this. but these things also do happen. Fortunately, knock on wood, we have very few claims in the past 20 plus years.
Sure. No, I just wanted to be sure that I understood the process correctly, that you are the one that says we're going to need this many linear feet, because obviously we don't have these three different contractors going out and looking at the site. So
they read the specs.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Any other comments from council before we move on to the residents? Go ahead.
I've had the pleasure of working with Chemin Valley. For what it's worth, I've had the pleasure of working with them in another community for over 10 years, and in this community, I'm not working on my how long I've been here. But anyway, I found them to be highly competent. I've never seen them really make any mistake or donation issue. If there's something unforeseen, then that's something we have to deal with. I have complete confidence in Mr. Sheehy and the organization. Honestly, I really
any other? Okay, we'll go to the residents. Gary, you got to come up to the mic.
I know.
It makes it easier for everybody to hear.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Okay, having the commercial, Karen Redding, Alexander Road. Having the commercial roofing company, I understand a little bit of the difference. You're talking to complete the job. Look at that. Because you're going to have less people. And that's part of your money difference. It's going to take 3 months versus, what does this one say, 60 days, 90 days? Are we willing to have 3 months of that road torn up like that? And that's part of your money.
Explain that part of the bit about the time frame.
The timeline is the contractor estimates what it's going to take for them to do the work. So
right.
it varies depending on their construction techniques. There's lots of different ways to do it. The vast majority of this work is directional boring. So they are setting up in a very limited, isolated area, and they have this boring machine that drills a line underground. And there's very little roadway being torn up or traffic detours and that sort of thing. It's actually, if it was surgery, I'd call it a minimally invasive procedure. It is not substantial way, open everything up and huge trench down the middle of the road. It is not that type of project. They really try to limit the amount of disturbance they have, which actually helps control the cost of the project. The less they disturb on the surface, the less there is to restore when they're done.
Anybody else want to comment? Carrie, did you want to say anything else? Or?
No, I said
okay.
Just like it said, it's going to take them longer, so there's less people that are actually doing the job. Because that's too big of a difference. It's going to be what you're paying out to them. Do you agree?
I got to say, we're not in a position to physically build this job ourselves. You hire licensed contractors. when I have six people working 10-hour days for 2 months, or if they want to have four people working 8-hour days for 4 months, we really don't care. If it was a big deal that you didn't want to have people working on this particular area for an extra couple months, and you wanted to pay a premium for that, you could. I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, it would have to be one heck of a motivation to spend an extra, you know, $250,000 to maybe have somebody less, you know, you have a couple pieces of equipment out on the road for the extra couple days. I don't think that it's really appropriate to try to dissect how they're going to go about doing it. It is proprietary. They do have their own tricks of the trade, so to speak. Let them do the work within the contract limits. You do the work. There's lots of really smart contractors that can come up with a better way to go about doing their work, a more efficient way to manage their crews. And that's part of it. That's part of their competitive advantage. Somebody's giving you a really low number, they're very competitive. I'm fascinated to see how they're going to do the work. Because this, like I said, this could be the new benchmark for what the, should be the linear foot price for this. So next time I bid one of these, I'm gonna lower my price. You know, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So, you can speculate about the best way to do it. And again, I don't try to become the contractor. That's just not what we do. They are focused on building it within the spec, and that's all we make sure that we do.
Mr. Mayor?
Hold on,
Mayor. Well, I just wanted to point out that, yeah, it says, you know, how long to build it, 90 days, but for this terrace company, they also want to start December. Second company doesn't want to start until January, and the third company doesn't want to start until February with 40 days. So we're still ending up at approximately the same time frame of completion on each of those.
I can't see it. Yeah, I saw it before. No.
Come on. Raymond Wheaton, 9346 Rochelle Drive. Good evening, Mayor, members of the Council. Good evening, thank you for explaining this contract that a lot of us did have, you know, residents had questions as well as Council. You did a very good job of explaining the contract piece. But my question for Council is regarding the funding mechanism, 50% of the project being funded by the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District, NCIP program, member community infrastructure program. And the funds from that the sewer district receives for that project comes from, of course, the ratepayers, meaning homeowners and businesses in the village. So half of the project is already coming essentially from us, all of us in this room, as well as our business community. The other half of the funding, as it's stated here, comes from the Cuyahoga County Sanitary Fund, which also comes from us. Essentially, the $150 that every resident now pays on our tax assessment, as well as our business community with a different calculation, the contract or this utility agreement that the village signed with the Cuyahoga County Department of Public Works. My understanding, essentially, that contract was for inspection and maintenance of our sewer systems here in Walton Hills. But here, we are designating some of those funds for a long-term capital improvement. And to the mayor and members of the infrastructure committee especially, I just wanted to ask that you guys could reconsider whether using the sanitary sewer fund, which is also paid by all of us in this room, is the right mechanism to pay for the second half of this project versus using some of the village's own dollars. I believe that, maybe it was in the August meeting, we were told that the surplus so far looked like it was in the $900,000 range. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. So I'm simply asking for this council to reconsider how it would pay for half of the project
whether it's more prudent to use part of a surplus, or whether it's more prudent to use the dollars that are basically set aside for routine inspection and maintenance. One of the reasons I'm really concerned about that is, as our service agreement provider, the county, have they really had an opportunity to get out there and do the inspections, the camera video, to see what other problems might be out there? These dollars might be better spent inspecting our system, especially in our industrial areas, so that we can see what other projects we may need to apply for from the sewer district. Of course, we've already missed the, well, we're not missed, but the window for applications for 2020 is already done, but the application project for, process for the member community infrastructure program for 21 is right around the corner. So I just wanted to put that out there for council to consider funding the second half of this project from village funds.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did anybody want to comment?
I thought Mr. Sheehy would.
A lot of your points brought up, so I'll just try to address different ones. The funding, the money that's actually in our account with the county, for a long period of time, the village did not pay anything for anybody to be submitting funds to the county in that fund. The village residents were not paying. We charge nothing, essentially. So when you have a relatively new sanitary sewer system, which most of the village does, as most of it was built, it's relatively new. It's in actually relatively pretty good shape overall. We do have some things that cost money to operate, some things that cost money to maintain, but generally speaking, the sewer system itself is in pretty good shape. For a number of years, there was a chunk of sewer in our industrial area that was maintained by the county. The county collected fees on that system, essentially from the Ford plant, all of our industrial stuff, goes to the Creek Road and off that way. So that system, for years and years, built up a big surplus of money in an account that was earmarked for Walton Hills projects. Once Walton Hills decided to incorporate the rest of the community into that, contributing to that pot of money, it really kind of freed up all the money that was in that account to be used village-wide. Prior to that, it would really only been used on the industrial park and the north field. So the force main had a frequent break history. Whenever it breaks, and it's broken a number of times over the past 5 years, when it breaks, the county, we need an emergency response. We have literally raw sewage running down the street when it breaks. It's nasty.
So how many houses does that
service?
A rough guess.
Yeah, a couple.
Oh, so it is servicing our residents.
Yes, servicing our residents, but the force main, when it breaks, it's a substantial problem, and we have to spend money. How did it seem fun to do an emergency repair? So we got to get out there in the middle of the night, it's on the weekend, whatever it is, and we got to isolate the problem, we got to fix it. And they're also maintaining the pump station and so forth while all that happens. It's a costly break. And you know, if you were going to try to chart how often you can expect a break like that to happen, with a line that's that old, you could probably expect one of those every couple of years would be a reasonable number. So if you're at $15,000 a break, you've got that burn rate for maintaining that line. So the county was in a position to say, hey, we're willing to dedicate it towards maintenance, because this actually is better planning for them. They'd rather not have to put those emergency responders out there and deal with the break, and it usually happens in terrible weather and all that kind of stuff. So they were able to allocate funds out of our account to help contribute to this project. So there really was no out-of-pocket short-term for the village. We do still have a solid surplus in the account. We do have pump stations and other things that are some big-ticket items, so it's good to leave that surplus in that account, because if something does, another big component breaks up, they want to be able to have the money to do it. I think that the county, as a partner, they've done this not only in Walton Hills, but lots of other towns. This is not an unusual thing for them to try to work with the town to get a regular maintenance problem addressed so that they don't have to keep coming back and fixing it constantly. So I think it's those are good, excellent questions. I don't want to speak to whether or not it makes sense for the village to contribute money. There is a funding source there that's willing to do it. I believe typically they kind of internally on that, and then it gets paid back over a period of time at a really low interest rate. So it's not like you drain all the money out of the account right away. It's a sort of a regular payback time, which is very manageable. So I think it's the right way to go that we have it set up. It's also nice that we're drawing a lot less on it because of this contract being so low. So it's not a big withdrawal out of that account, to make it safe.
Go ahead.
Do you have any, do you know how much money is in that account right now for us?
I believe around $210,000, something like that, off the top of my head.
Yeah. I was going to ask, do we know what percentage of it we would be using?
Yeah, I think the number was about $210,000, and I think that the way it can get a loan through the AWWA, it would be about $10,000 a year. And this is a, you know, really this is a 40 to 50 year install. This is a pretty high tech, high quality force main. And then very few joints, and very few areas where it could potentially break. Part of the problem with the existing one is a lot of joints, and every time something, the ground shifts or freezes or whatever, there's a shift and it breaks. And
I'm sorry, Don. How long did you say that this should last us?
This is a 40 to 50 year install.
Okay. Any other questions from council for Don? No. From the residents?
Can I ask Don one more question?
Yeah.
As Mr. Whedon was stating, I'll kind of dovetail off of him. There's pieces and parts to the sanitary sewer system all over the building.
Right.
And you had stated that our system is relatively new and in relatively good shape. Other than the force mains themselves, what other big ticket items do we have that is included in the sewer system?
Yeah, the big ticket items that are, I would say, the biggest maintenance headache are force mains and the pump stations. Mm-hmm. The pump stations, they're kind of what they sound like. There's some giant pumps, there's a lot of mechanical systems, there's an electrical feed that goes in there, there's a lot of controls and monitors and all that kind of stuff. And they wear out, you know, so the county maintains those for us. They pull the pumps out, they rebuild the pumps, they service all of the controls on these pump stations, and properly maintained, those are typically about a 30-year item.
So those would be our biggest ticket items?
Yeah, those are sort of the biggest, you know, point expenditures. The sanitary sewer itself, I mean, really, when it was built, you guys got a really nice sanitary sewer. You use what's called truss pipe, and most of those are pretty heavy-duty plastic pipe that's got like a double wall on it. It's all that stuff, and it went in really well. So it's being maintained, it's being clean, but you really don't have too many headaches with it. Occasionally, you had a couple connections that got messed up, and that was an expense. Periodically, you'll have something like that, but it's in good shape, and there's really nothing that's driving it that says, "Boy, you got a big problem with the pipe failure or anything like that." It's the same thing for business. It's really stable.
Thank you. Come on up to the
mic. Good evening. My name is James Smithley, 7698 Walton Road. The question I have, and here is to Lisa, and maybe be done it. Is there a performance bond associated with this contract?
Go ahead,
Don,
for my answer.
Yes, there is.
My next question is there liquidated damages associated with the contract?
there is a clause, I'm calling it.
That way everybody can hear it.
There's a clause in there for liquidated damages, not as a punitive measure, but as to recoup the cost of what is potentially lost from the city. We don't have a line item that says every day they don't get this job done, they're going to pay us $1,000. There's nothing stuff like that in the contract. But there is a liquidated damages clause if for some reason the contractor stopped working, we do have liquidated damages as a
And that's standard in every one of our
contracts. It really is standard in all the contracts, yes.
Okay, since that part of the contract is vague, are we going to allow days that are unable to work because of cold weather? And have we defined the exclusion and let the contractor know that if it's like 10 degrees or colder, it'll be excluded as a day of your contract subtracted? What have we done there because of the time situation that we're in? They're starting December and they're finishing in February, so they are going to run into some bad weather. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I think what we typically do is the ODOT actually has terminology and we reference it in our contract as far as what's considered truly a bad weather day. For this type of underground activity, it would have to be fairly severe cold, so yeah, probably below 10 degrees. And also, you could also have the opposite where very heavy rains, an unsafe work condition because there's water running down the side of the road right next to where they're trying to work. So I think we do that on a case-by-case basis. With this contract, we have to remember there is nothing necessarily completely pressing us that we must get this done by March 1st. These are our own internal deadlines that we're setting. So we make reasonable accommodations for any of the contractors to do the work in a timely fashion. If we find that they're, for some reason they're just not showing up on the job, or it's unnecessary delays, then we ratchet up the enforcement over time. But if they're making progress and they're showing up and they're doing work, and for whatever reason, you know, they're not boring quite as quickly as they thought they were going to bore the installation of the pipe, we typically don't punish them for that.
Any other questions for him? Yeah. Go ahead, Jesse. You got to grow, Josephine.
Martin.
You got to grow.
I guess I'm looking back to the time when we put, and this thing doesn't work, we put the sanitary sewers in, and it's been 40 years ago. Two companies went bankrupt. Now, I don't know if the bid was a lower bid than the other company, but say, for instance, they have a problem. This is not as big of a job, but if they do fall into a problem and they can't complete it at this price, I mean, is there some recourse? Because I don't understand, and I'm not an engineer, what procedure this terrorist company is using to do this force main board different than the other companies for triple the price? I mean, are they doing it the same procedure?
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's a concern of everybody with the difference of the price. And where on Edward Road is this going to be performed? What part of Edward?
It actually involves three streets.
So now, if you want to come to the mic, it makes it everybody can hear.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it really, there's a portion of Edward where Corral comes in.
Corral comes in.
Yeah. So and it goes actually tied into the cul-de-sac, and then there's a little easement. You go from the cul-de-sac and Crichton over to Crowell, and then up Crowell to Egbert, and then it takes a left. And it's another few.
Takes a left. So the procedure is to bore into the original pipes, or are they going to have to retake it?
No, it's a bore that runs essentially parallel to the existing pipes, and the existing force main stays in place for the entire duration. And then once the new pipe is installed, tested, and then they make the switch over.
They force it down into the ground. They bore it down.
Oh, it's going to be a new pipe put in here.
Yes.
And
then once this is completed, then they're going to disconnect the other pipe.
That's correct.
So there'll be no problem if they run into, like the sanitary sewers, they ran into sand, they had problems with two companies going bankrupt. Not that this is a big of a job, but there'll be some recourse for us if something serious happens and nobody knows what's underground, right?
Well, we have some idea what's underground, but you're not 100%, but you're right. And the recourse is they have a performance time. So they are obligated to perform the work as they bid. If for some reason this or any contractor on any project goes out of business, we had a company that had a fire at their main plant and lost all sorts of equipment, and they were in a world of hurt. This was a couple of years ago. Fortunately, they didn't go out of business. But that type of thing happens. It has nothing to do with us or our contract. They may not be able to finish the project. It's always a risk. That is why you have a performance bond. If for some reason they can't finish the work, you go back to the bonding company, they hire somebody else to finish the work.
So until the job is completed, people have use of their...
Nothing changes.
Nothing changes.
Everything works the entire time.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions from residents with this item? Council, any questions from council? What would you like to do moving forward? Would you like to see it on the council agenda for next week?
I'm ready to vote for the site. I know, and rightfully so, residents, and we all had questions on this because it does stick out, you know, for us lay people. But I'm satisfied with all the answers. I just wouldn't be able to explain to the next person to say, that asking, why did you pick a company that was $100,000+ more when your engineer told you not to?
Right.
So, no, I'm happy, and I've been here, 13 years, John? 13, you've been here 15, right, Denny? Mr. Sheehy and Chagrin Valley Engineering has never steered us wrong. I can't say that about many people, many companies, but I can say that about Chagrin Valley. That's an unsolicited pat on the back. This is a small, very small operation, considering on what Terrace has done in the past. I don't have any problem voting for this.
Mr. Mayor?
I'm under the understanding that we're taking the lowest and best bid.
Yes.
Okay, so that was sort of what you said.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I am. Just to make it clear,
that's Terrace, a construction company. That's the one we decided on. Yeah, I'm ready to vote too, Mayor.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, please.
Mr. Sheehy, I thought I heard somewhere that Terrace was like a huge, huge company that does the vast majority of Cleveland's work, too, so that could...
I would say that they're a mid-sized construction company, but in terms of types of projects, they could bid on a $3, $4, $5 million project without any hesitation. I don't know if they could bid on a $50 million project. There are some upper limits there, but they're a substantial player in this construction.
Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead. Come, you go up and light Steve.
Steve Velt, 1515-3 Alexander Road. I think what a lot of the folks here, and I'm speaking for everybody here, that I think their biggest concern is that with tariffs, everything is open-ended, per se. You know, on the first part of it is 90 days to complete. On the alternate bid, it's 90 days to complete. So that's 6 months. And only one company, which is Don Bortco, is the only one that gave us a start date and an estimated restoration and basically a completion date. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with Broadview Road. Terrace did that work. They overstayed their welcome by 7 months. So I think all really we're concerned with is that how long is our village going to be tore up for? Are they going to have, you know, three or four guys come to the job site whenever they feel like it or whenever they have extra people? Or is this going to be start to finish? I mean, it just doesn't seem, I mean, I don't have a construction company, I could do that. I can go over and do your kitchen for $10,000. But the next guy might be $30,000. I might only send one guy there for the next 15 months, and I can afford to do that. So, I mean, that's just where I think this is at. You know, they're a low bidder. They've got so much work going on in Cuyahoga County right now. They can spread their wealth, but on the flip side, how long are we going to be tore up for?
There's pretty clear language, and again, this is maybe just the way it's presented in the summary, but their early start date is 12-1 of 2019. We haven't awarded them the contract yet. So somebody that says they can start, you know, October 10th, that's great. But they're not, because they can't start until they actually have a contract in hand and it's processed and all that stuff. So the physical start date is dependent on the action that they're taking in this room. So some contractors will say, I'll start as soon as we get notice to proceed, or they'll attach a date. Terrace has attached a date to both the main bid and the alternate of 12-1 of 2019. And they have 90 days. So realistically, I don't have a calendar in front of you, but very close to the end of February, they should be substantially completed with their work. That is the guideline that they've got. So in terms of a timeline, the other ones are looking at 4/20 of 20, 11/27. They said 40 days. They're going to start February 1st. So maybe they're done by, you know, March 15th-ish. So they're all looking at a very, you know, very similar, like late, you know, mid-late February, early March completion. None of them will be able to finish the restoration until springtime. So you can't plant grass in the snow. So I know that no matter what, that's substantially complete. Now they'll still have to come back and touch things up and touch up lawn areas and disturb areas, no matter who it is. So in terms of total time out on the job or anything like that, they're all pretty similar. And to me, it is not a deciding factor in any way. They're all equal and close to equal in that regard. And again, there's nothing pressing with this install. If we don't get this installed in the next 4 months, that be in violation of some of the PA rules or something like that. So we don't really have any other motivation other than price.
You know, Don, I think a good answer kind of helped with the residents too. From what I understand from you and Rob, this project isn't, like you said, minimally invasive. It's not, there isn't going to be a lot of the roads shut down or anything like that. You kind of want to explain like what the interruption is to the residents or the traffic. I think that might
And again, you know, it's the contractor is ultimately going to be responsible, but there's going to be this relatively small area where they're going to have a piece of equipment that does the directional boring, and they're going to have stockpile of pipe material and some fusing equipment to push the pipe through. It's not tearing up the entire roadway. Most of the work isn't even on Edinburgh Road. It's really on the two side streets. So these side streets have five or six houses on them. So it is really, really a low impact project. I don't think that anybody in any significant way is going to be disturbed by this project.
The worst part about in the sanitary is when it does break, it's sewage. It's raw sewage going into the environment. Like you said, how many times we've had to not just fix the pipe, but clean up. We have also environmental responsibility as being, I always feel, as being good stewards of the environment. And when you're dumping sewage and you're aware of it, you need to fix it.
Mayor, if I could, you know, the process by which we obtain funding is a competitive grant process. So we submitted our grant along with probably 30 other applicants, and we got funded because it's a significant environmental issue. So they don't hand it out just because we're nice guys. You know? So we told them what the problem was and the concern that we had about a breakage, and they were willing to fund it. And like I said, it's not automatic. Not everybody got funded on these projects.
Any other questions from council, the residents, anybody else? Rob, you have anything to add? Or?
No, I think
If you don't have to, I'm just, I just.
About this.
Before we, we'll put it on the agenda for the council meeting. Okay. And then we can invite Kate. You ready?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I did. I'm sorry. It'll be brief. I would like to ask for a motion to move other business, because I did want to talk about something I received from Joe and Don this afternoon. I gave you guys a copy of it. If I could have a motion to move item 11, why Don's here, between 6 and 7, so we can talk about that. That what I handed you out.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I'd like to make a motion to move item 11 to in between number 6 and 7.
Councilperson Lindell?
What are we voting on here?
We're not.
Other business to
I want to, what I passed out, just want to move it up.
Item 11, you're moving.
Move it up.
I just want to make sure. Okay. Yes? Right.
Brenner Miller?
Yes.
Allen?
Yes.
Said yes.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Nielsen?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, just to kind of, you guys have the memo in front of you and a piece of legislation that Joe put together. This afternoon, Joe sent me a memo about this, and then I asked him, you know, when we need to get this legislation passed. And what this has to do with is the Dunham Road project, a grant we applied for with, and Don, I'm wrong, you can correct me, with Maple Heights. We've already talked about it, accepting it, this body. They just want, this is a housekeeping thing, they want legislation with the application. But Don, if you want to expound on it.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, Maple Heights is the lead applicant for this project, for the Dunham Road project that we're trying to be funded from the Ohio Public Works Commission. Part of the reason that they are the lead applicant is there's a bit of a points strategy. They are slightly more economically disadvantaged than Long Hill, so we get more points. So we want them to be the lead because it increases our chances of both communities getting this project. It's also, you get some additional points because you're doing a joint project with another. So, trying to be good neighbors and all that kind of stuff. And it also makes sense to build the project as the same project. Cut it up into two pieces. So, they as a lead have submitted the application. Ohio Public Works Commission has said we do want the non-lead communities to just give the mayor authorization to apply to the funds. So, this legislation is essentially that is offered, gives council gives the mayor authorization to sign the document. That's really it. It's still keeping, and you know, they haven't really asked for this, but it's something that we're asking for. So
and just like I said, I know we've talked because we have received some funding for Dunham Road, and we accepted that grant. We wanted to. It doesn't mean by doing this that we actually have to accept these funds. When the time comes, if we're not financially, if council's not in favor of it at that time,
yeah, you could be you could get awarded the funding from Ohio Public Works, and you could decide not to participate. But the idea here really is trying to combine a number of funding sources that we're trying to get. We get a source from the county, actually two different sources from the county, to really offset the costs. So we're hoping to get this funded. It would be a very low cost fix for a road that's got some major problems, especially you know, all those joints that are failing here. I know these guys did a great job patching, but the patches don't last forever, and we know that it's a problem. This would be really fixed up.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, go ahead.
Right. In regards to the joint effort between Maple Heights and us, if we decided that if we were awarded this and then decided not to participate with that, affect Maple Heights' award in any way?
Good question. They would probably have to amend their project award. It wouldn't be to the same, certainly the same limits or the same dollars. It would require some some additional effort on their part to scale back the project, it could be done. I recommend that we put them in that position. But it's something, it's done in the past. So, you know, again, it's a collaborative effort. It's a really good project. The village spends a lot of money maintaining that road, and the money that we put into the village in terms of cash that will go into this project is really a pretty small portion if we get all the other funding in place.
We all know Dunham Road is terrible, probably one of the worst main roads we have in there, and the hill is terrible. Explain the length, because the length from for us would be from our border up there down to Astorhurst,
right? Not correct. Yeah, it goes down to the old Astorhurst golf course. There's a little bit of funding actually to do a little bit of work on Tinker's Creek.
Up to Tinky Stab.
Yeah, because the cork line kind of stops there with the bike lanes and that kind of thing. So we would pick up that piece, and really the idea is to make it a usable bike lane on the roadway. Bicycle track, two park, all the way from the Tinks Tavern, all the way, which goes all the way to the canal, towpath area. So it's really important, like, and the county's really excited about funding a portion of that cost to really complete that.
Because of the bike path.
Right, right. And the condition of the road, and, you know, it's really an area that needs additional, needs better service. There's no sidewalks, they need something.
So we can put it on there.
Sure.
We make your decision whether you want another reading or you want to pass it on suspension. Yeah, there is in the packet, you know, in the front page, you see the legislation. They have a date of 11/15/19. So that's all. I would recommend passing it under suspension. We already talked about the legislation, the project already have agreed to it. Now we're just giving that to go with the application.
Yeah, sure.
But you can decide. Always call Don or need more information or Joe. Any questions on that? Residents, anybody have any comments on that? Great. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. So debt issuance for 2019. Our current note will come due towards the end of November. Not making assumptions, but we may not have the November 5th meeting.
We'll talk about that.
But because of that, I do need to have a pass prior to that if the council is okay with that, so that we can go out for pricing the second week of November. So currently our note is $1.64 million. If you're looking in the agenda packets, you can see our debt schedule. We're going to be paying down $145,000. Two items which have been issued for several years, prior purchases of police vehicles, prior purchases of service vehicles will be paid off completely. Those have, you know, a standard pay down time limit between 5 to 7 years, so we have to pay those off first. Our road projects and the purchase of property, we have, you know, 10 to 15 years on the road projects, up to 20, 30 years on the purchase of a building. So we're still good there. So we're looking at paying down 145. We'll reissue our note at $1,495,000. We do 1 year municipal notes. Right now, interest rates are incredibly favorable. We're looking at probably between 1.4 to 1.6%, which is great. Last year, I believe this issuance that's coming due was at between, I think it was 2.6%. So there'll be a significant savings there. Down below, just because it is on the spreadsheet, this shows our other outstanding debt, which is in the form of OPWC, Ohio Public Works Commission funds. Those are either at 0% or 2%. Interest rates, so you can see the amount that we pay on a yearly basis for all those projects. about $37,000. So altogether, currently, after we reissue the note, we'll have about $2 million in debt. OPWC is not factored in to our debt ceiling, so we're nowhere close to that amount. And then likely, Alexander Road will probably start paying on that in 2020, the OPWC portion. Dunham Road may not hit until 2021, depending on when the project's completed. So that is that. Any questions?
Go ahead.
In your spreadsheet, Katie, the pay down, the deletion, $145,000, that included interest, correct? Is that total?
This doesn't factor in interest, no. So this is the principal amount. The note that will be issued will be $145,000 less than the previous year.
So we did pay interest.
2.6%, which is factored in our bond retirement fund. So.
It's in the bond retirement fund, not in this?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else on council? Residents?
No, it's so fun.
So put your
Mr. Mayor, Rob said he had a question.
Oh, you have a question.
You're saying those trucks we bought 5 years ago are going to be paid off now?
Yeah.
Can we get more trucks?
That's council.
No.
I will say it's great that we are not issuing new debt for our police car purchases and for your leader that we did purchase this spring. So we're lucky. And also, sorry, I meant to say, initially when we did the budget last year, projected paying down $100,000 because of our decision. I wanted to be a little bit more aggressive, so we went with $145,000. But if you would prefer to scale that back or add more, we can work that in. But this is
where
I felt
comfortable.
No, I have a question.
Oh,
I was trying to help Rob out there.
If I read this right, if we were just to roll this over into a bond, it would be at 4.5% or thereabouts.
Bonds, you generally do not want to even look at doing a bonding issue unless you have probably $4-6 million to look at because the issuance costs are substantial. We've never been rated. That process plus the underwriting, the bond council, you're looking at almost six figures in cost to do that sort of a debt issuance.
Right.
And you actually have to spend that money. These one-year notes are actually considered bond anticipation notes, where if you have enough built up, then you can roll them into a bond. You have to have already spent the money in order to issue a bond.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I do have a question. Katie, what's the date that this needs to be submitted by?
I would like to have, if it's possible, for it to be passed next week in case we do not have a November 5th meeting because they would like to price it the week of November,
yeah.
What is that, 10th?
So the 11th.
That legislation would have to be passed for them to go to pricing.
And that was one thing I know I don't want to have a meeting on November 5th. I know you probably, none of us probably do. So I would say we never, when a meeting falls on the election year, we usually cancel it. It's a COW meeting, so I would say we, what does council feel? What's that?
Cancel.
Yeah. Okay. So it would be good to have this on for the next meeting.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay,
we'll still have that on there. Thank you. Any questions from residents before we move on to this? All good? Okay, thank you. Brian, item eight.
We did get, thank you, Mayor, we did get, three, you know what I'm saying? We did get three quotes from three different printers. These just came through, the first one came through last night, and one was forwarded to me, but I did not receive it, so I did receive it before the meeting. And then the other one was given to me like a quarter after five this evening from another printer. We have, I re-emailed everybody and told them of the specs that we wanted.
So we've got apples versus apples this time.
Yeah, everything's the same. We've got the 110-pound cover, which is on the one quote from the PostNet that you have in your paper. That is the actual cover sheet paper. So that's what we'll be covering the directory with. So you can, you know, feel that and see what it's like. So we have 76 pages, black and white, 110-pound white cover. And we've got the first Atom printing. By the way, we did talk about, I think, in this email that you have, I'll just glance over this. We talked last week about that bonding, that perfect binding, it's called, mm-hmm. like a book. That is the Acklin printing put in there. We didn't quote on perfect binding because it's the most expensive method.
So we don't want that.
we decided we didn't want that anyway. So anyways, the short story is Acklin printing, 1,200 books, $1.86 per book. PostNet, and this is all plus tax. $1.46 plus taxes. Saturn Press, $2.30 plus taxes. Everything's equal, or as equal as I could. A couple of them emailed me back and said, well, why are you doing that? And all this stuff. It's like, just give me a quote. Yeah. So those are our quotes. $1.86, Acklin Printing. PostNet, $1.46, and Saturn Press, $2.30. She did throw in a color cover, $2.55, but we decided not to entertain that. That's it. That's what we have. I would go, of course, this, you know, we're bidding this, it technically does not need to be bid, but to be fair, and we want to be conservators of the village funds and everything. We don't need, I talked to Mr. Montella beforehand, we do not need legislation for this, anything like that, it's so low. You know, maybe
a resolution. Make a decision tonight, we just make a motion to accept one of the bids.
Oh, whatever you feel is appropriate.
Yeah. Or you can wait till next week, too. If you need time to think about it, you can do it at the next council meeting.
PostNet's total, it's in the... It's down here. Price is $1.46 for both of plus tax.
Which comes to?
Oh, the total, kind of $1,200. Yeah, they're all 1,200 books.
Right.
$1,752.
$1,752. You can add more. I'm not doing that.
I'm with this. Cheating right now.
$1,752.
Yep, plus tax.
No tax. We're taxed.
Oh, well, Brian's the one that said we plus tax.
I'm just reading. Thanks, Dave. I wish I could do that in the grocery or in the other store.
But anyways, that's what we have. I'm ready to just take the, they were all competitive. I'm ready to take the lowest one. That's fine by me and my vote would propose that. The $1.46 per glove.
Agreed, lowest and best.
Yeah, agreed.
And we have, like I said, apples versus apples, so we know exactly what we're getting.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be
You could do, we could do it either way. We could do it right. Well, you know what? If we're going to vote on it, we probably should do it in the council.
In the council.
So we don't need the legislation. We can do a motion.
Right.
So we'll do a motion.
So the resolution,
yeah,
motion.
Yeah.
I can do that. Yeah.
All right. Let's do that then. Very
okay.
good. Okay.
Oh, by next week, it won't be.
Closed.
Thank you, everybody, and I know Crystal's in here. Thank you for your help and everything in your knowledge and educating me and what folks can have to say.
And we'll get a nice new direction on that. This next piece, the next item on here is a piece of legislation John put together. Council requested to make sure that the village always maintains a human resource company, a third party. If for some reason something happens, council would actually have to vote on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we do have somebody in place, not somebody, we do have a company in place now, but this stems from making sure we have on this committee. It's a good piece of legislation. If you want to change the way the legislation, anything in the legislation, I don't know if everybody's looked it over, but it's, John, I don't know if you want to talk about it, John put it together, and just so from what council was saying in the last couple of meetings.
This is about to keep it simple, and their powers and duties are defined by their contract, so and they'll follow the employee in. Pretty simple. Protect the employees, give them a person to go to, and if they have an issue, and certainly you can change it a little bit if you like it. You still have to prove you don't have to pass right away, but it's what you can.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, go ahead.
John, I do like that you have that this is, this whatever company it may be, has to be approved by council. So I do appreciate that, and there's a sense of checks and balances. So that's one piece, and I'm happy to get this off of the table and passed, although I hate passing everything as an emergency basis.
Yeah, go ahead.
I apologize.
I don't care about
that. While that joke had a curious idea, and I apologize. We don't have, we already have a company in place.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to vote on that company, so we can do three readings on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing pressing on this.
Yeah, I mean, I understand things like
pressing is already done pretty good.
Right.
Right. Right,
and I understand things like what Katie needs, you know, as being right away, and I was a little iffy on the sanitation sewer, but, you know, if we do want to get that moving so that they hopefully can start, you know, as soon as possible, and there is some time involved with that, so. But I do appreciate this, and I'm hoping that we can see then, too, John, in coordination with this, the legislation about hiring and firing employees. Will that be coming soon to us also?
Well, Jennifer, I know I mentioned to you, and we can all talk, in 260, a lot of that is defined, you know, council's got to approve this
mm-hmm.
and that. So if we want to start looking at that and decide if you want to change, there's just a lot there in 260. There's no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of it is mayor's approval, mayor's appointment with council's approval, so you need that. So it just depends on how you want to go about it. So I would say we start, you know, if you want to look at that and see if 260 needs to be changed. I don't know if it's one of those things you just want to, you know, I think you got to dive into it a little bit and really look at. There's a lot there. So especially if you want to define each position, you know, and then see which ones are defined. I don't know if any of them are defined by the, you know, Ohio Revised Code, too.
Yeah.
Some positions might be defined there, too, so that's something we would need to look at.
So, Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Yeah, I know that the hiring authority is in there, but not firing authority.
Right.
So that's what we would probably try to address, look at all of these and see what makes sense.
Mr. Mayor, I think we have been discussing something about with the dismissal about it had to be with the department head and the mayor or and the council had to agree that it something. So there's been some discussion that it just couldn't be, you know, if we wanted them or the mayor wanted whomever fired, there had to be like a check and balance. So
right, not just a unilateral.
Right.
But yeah.
And the mayor had a good comment last week to me that we can always also bring in, or we should bring in, this HR company that we hired, because they probably, I'm sure they deal with this,
mm-hmm.
and so they would probably be able to give us some good ideas and some input on doing this.
Right.
But Mr. Mayor, I certainly agree with that because I know where I work. There are so many protocols that have to be completed when you are going to terminate someone. And so, you know, they could give us a lot of good information before we put our foot in it, so to speak.
Would we?
The corrective action process has to be reviewed, which we understand. So that is something that they can look at it and suggest they might have a form or whatever. So I think there's just a lot there. If that's something you want to start diving into, we can start,
I think
November 5th, though.
No,
but I think it is something that's imperative for our employees, and so that they have a distinct, idea of what could happen and what needs to be done. You know, somebody in the service department, Rob just wants to willy-nilly get rid of for whatever reason, or you would want to get rid of, but Rob doesn't agree with. You know, we do need those checks and balances for our employees. So if that's something that we need to ask them specifically, that HR department, I do think consulting them on that would be a good idea. So if that's something that we need to do, if we could do that so they could start delving into it.
To get back, not the thing, but to get back to this, we're going to move on this piece of legislation. Is that correct? The one for the
resource.
Make sure someone's in place.
Yep.
To make sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we'll do that then. And then we'll ask HR, your partner in HR, with what we're talking about with the corrective action, also termination. And other things, probably, I'm going to start diving. They can look at 262 and see. Because there should be a good chain of command. You should go to your direct supervisor first. If you can't get it resolved there, then who's the next level, and so forth. And also have that compliance line at HR. The Department of HR is going to give us a line that you can call and Okay, very good. Any questions on that? Anybody have any questions on that? Any questions from the residents on that? Okay. Then we got item number 10. John, do you want to talk? You want me to talk to that? Go ahead.
There's been a new law established by the state of Ohio regarding driving while approaching stationary public safety vehicles. You probably heard some stories about people having to get out of the way when there's a police officer pulling someone over. You have to move over, change lanes if you're able to, or do the best effort that you can. So the hope is to avoid any accidents and deaths resulting from hitting an officer or a pedestrian or a driver of a vehicle when they're out of the vehicle. So right now we don't have a local code for it because we haven't updated our code for it yet. We'll do that probably at the end of the year, or maybe But in the meantime, we have to cite them under state code, which if we do that, the state gets the money, basically. Not that we're just in it for the money, but we might as well be think smart here and say, let's create this local code. By creating the local code, we get to keep a majority of the revenue. And so we're going to create it now to sort of avoid waiting, because they are citing people under the state code, and the police chief and the magistrate and myself and then the mayor. And I think all council would agree that this is a good idea, basically.
Yeah, the questions. It came out of, just to tell how it came out of the mayor's court from our magistrate, along with our prosecutor and our law solicitor, that they're seeing more and more of these, and they're going over to the Garfield court, correct, instead of staying here. So that's why they suggested, prosecutor suggested we do this along with the police chief. So it's a good thing, and there's more and more buckling down on it too, because people don't respect when they see an emergency vehicle pulled over. They hear more and more police, like John said, police officers getting struck, or the car getting struck, or so there's being a lot more tickets being written for it. So this is just another thing to kind of strengthen it too.
Mayor?
Yes.
This also covers service vehicles too.
Yes, yes.
Garbage trucks, village vehicles, all that stuff. Yes, just police vehicles, which is good. I've spoken to the chief before on this. I cringe when I come down the Alexander Road and I see a police officer's got somebody pulled over on the side of the Alexander, and they're walking out into the traffic. I just pray for them, because it's like, I've seen too many videos where police officers get hit. I don't know if it's a strategic thing that they pull them over right there as opposed to pulling them to a side street where there's less traffic. There might be a strategic advantage for the police officer to do that. I don't know. But I'd like to ask the chief about that practice, just because
dangerous.
And people don't slow down. It was right by, and you're in an ambulance all the time, and you know it. Mm-hmm. So,
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, go ahead.
I did talk about this briefly with the chief also a month or two ago, just because of a few things that I observed. One of them was a disabled vehicle on Alexander, just east of Dunham Road, so they were on the hill. Cars were whizzing right past. They were mostly off the road, but cars were not getting out of their lane. So my concern at that time when I talked to the chief was if we would be able to get signage that said, move over for flashing lights, flashing vehicles. So would this help if an officer saw somebody do that also with a disabled vehicle? Would that be covered under this?
I'll have Jen answer that.
I mean, I know I'm on I-76 and I-77 all the time down in Akron.
Right.
And 224 and stuff. And yeah, we get 3-4 car pile-ups, and we've got an engine truck there and a couple of Akron Fires and a couple of our cars, and doesn't matter, yellow safety vest, red hair, pushing a cot, they're right there. There's no way to rope it off, in the middle of a freeway or anything like that. So Akron has been trying to crack down more on things like that. Okay. But yeah, I don't want anybody getting.
I don't know if that means a tow truck or some servicing vehicle or some. I'll see what the definition of that is, if that's for someone who's broken down on the side of the road.
And this poor guy was trying to change his tire.
Yeah.
And of course, it's a driver's side tire, so, I just thought, oh my God,
I suppose you could have it.
Mayor?
Yes.
I think something like this is somewhat, we're trying to legislate I can't believe we're legislating stuff like this. I mean, this should already be in our laws. If there's an emergency vehicle out there, and there's a speeder or someone who's not being careful or approaching with caution, that person that's not being cautious or what have you, they should be immediately cited, okay? You know, we had a stop sign laws in this village, and I walk sometimes, and even driving, and I see, especially the worst place is McClellan and Alexander. They come roaring out of there. They don't even stop. They don't even pause, okay? You probably put a sign up there that says pause instead of stop, and they wouldn't pause. I'm telling you right now, they would boil right through. So we need more enforcement, more than anything, okay? That's what I think. And I think it's just...
Let me add, since Wise came up today, maybe I didn't articulate it correctly. With our magistrate hearing it, he can assert the punishment accordingly with the officer that has given the ticket. Okay? So in other words, when it goes to Garfield, it's in the situation happened in our village, we control it, we control the fine, we control the outcome. Where before it was going to Garfield. So there's a lot of it, like Mr. Montel said, instead of it going to Garfield, it's going to stay here in our court. Okay. So it's not so much we're putting a law in place to ticket them, we're putting the way it's going to supersede the state, correct?
Correct.
Doesn't make any sense to cite somebody in the mayor's court or state code.
Seems to me we should be start trying to change the law that doesn't allow Garfield to have sway over what's written up in our community.
Well, they would still punish them under the state code. We have more control of it.
But it's a good thing. It's suggested from the law department along with the chief's side. And we can put it on legislation. Don't have to pass it for suspension. We can have first reading on it. If you're in favor of putting it on the next,
sure.
At least start with it. And if you have questions too, you can always call the chief, or I can bring the chief in if you have questions or about it. Good with that then?
Sure.
All right. Let's see what we got here. Yeah, well, we moved to other business. So. The only thing I just have one statement, just to let everyone know. I got this from Joe Gelati. Next week, it is expected that Specialized Construction will begin the road work. This is for what we passed for our road program this year. They will crack, seal, Sagamore and Walton roads. They will also perform some asphalt spot patching on Alexander, Hickory, and Chestnut. So that they're going to start that. Project hopefully will get good weather for asphalt. So that's really that's it.
Yeah. I just had a quick question for Katie. Thank you for the report. Is this entire report as of August 31st?
September
because of the funding. The fund summary is August 31st, and the rest of the report is the end of September. Is that what it is?
No, it's all September. She just
there's no change to heading on.
All right, I'll change. Thank you. Yeah.
We can put another one in everyone's box.
Just as long as I know the date, it's not
worth it. Mayor, I'd like to just make one more point. Rob Callan does an excellent job inspecting our buildings and calling people to task. We had a slacker that he let his house get a little dark and what have you, and Rob actually talked to that person and got them to clean their house up. So I think Rob should get very, very special attention on that.
It wasn't me, was it?
Slacker.
Names, Brian. I have no idea.
And that also goes with his territory. He has to be discreet, because we all do live next door to each other. We all enjoy each other.
as neighbors, so go ahead, Fred.
Mr. Mayor, yes. I had a resident come to me about the power station.
Yes.
A loud humming noise coming from the power station, and I don't know if anybody, Egbert or Dunham, Alexander, has noticed it. Started getting louder and louder, and I contacted the illuminating company for a couple of weeks, and they get back to me, and they had a problem down there once before with this, and it wasn't as loud, and the engineers took care of it, they worked on it, and now they contacted me now, and they said that they have the problem again. They're aware of the problem, so anybody living Dunham Road, Dunham Road, Alexander Road, you're hearing that they're addressing it. They had their engineers working on it. They said that the noise goes up and then goes down, that's according to the resident, and they're well aware of it. So at least the illuminating company has acknowledged the fact that the problem's there, and they're going to work on it and see if they can try to fix it.
Where's it the loudest, right around the, by Egbert, where the park comes in by the hill?
Up on the resident that called me, he's up on top of the hill on it, and it seems to be that the sound travels like where I live on a hill. You get the sound and you get the noise from the trains up behind the racetrack, and you could hear it. It's the same thing on the hill there, that they notice it a little more because there's no buffer with, as much with the trees. So, but he has his windows open at night, and him and his wife, and they noticed that the sound this last time, excuse me, started going up and down. And they said that was something a little bit different, and they hadn't experienced that. So, but he said it was very loud. Now, Rob had a couple of complaints. I know that he thought maybe they were coming from the poles. I don't, you know, it's hard to say that sound echoes through there, especially with the leaves on the tree. Now, once, you know, we lose these leaves, if that sound is that loud, I mean, it's going to affect people. But again, they said that they're working on it. So I know you said that you hear it down on the standards.
Yep.
We just have to stay on about it.
Right.
That's all. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, go ahead.
I had a few items. I talked last time about Mr. Tony Olsko and everything that he did with that property, and I'd like to ask if we could do a proclamation for him and if I could ask him to come here and explain exactly what he did to help this whole process along at one of the meetings. I don't know at this point what his availability would be, so I'm not asking for something, you know, next week. But just like within maybe sometime in November and stuff, if we could do something like that for him. Talking about Rob, another subject, talking about Rob in the service department, I wanted to ask Rob, because in speaking with a few of the employees, Rob, would you please think about if there is any restructuring that you think needs done in the service department, job titles that were not filled, if those need to be, or anything else like that, because it seems to be some inconsistencies in there, and I would like Rob's input on that, you know, primarily. And the other thing is, I just wanted to bring up that I'd like to, Fred, start looking into the fire contract, and there seems to be some issues with the safety fund, possibly, and I think that's something that we need to start getting into, you know, within the next month or so, also, and look into. So,
Mr. Mayor, one more thing.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask Rob to start using the new lever.
Yeah, leaves haven't fallen yet. We don't want to fall backwards.
I mean, we actually, even though shipping ended October 1st, we went ahead and we ran the shipper around again on Monday. And then, we had a little tutorial on the new machine, and we got it out there today.
I just thought, I
wish it was spring.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anybody else have any comments?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Laurie.
I have some dates for recreation. On October 23rd, our Blue Shots at the Event Center down on Alexander. and October 27th will be the Halloween party, and there'll be entertainment, food, beverages, and costume contests at the Den Center. And November 5th will be light screening, lifeline screening at the Den Center. Registration is required by calling 1-888-563-6450. I would highly recommend the lifeline screening. It's invaluable. There's many people who have found some things and sent them to the doctor and they've saved their lives. So I guess some thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Motion for adjournment.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion to adjourn COW meeting of October 8th at 9:08.
Second.
Or whatever time that really is.
9:08
or.
Councilperson
Mendel?
Yes.
Reverend Miller?
Yes.
Allen?
Yes.
Yelsey?
Yes.
Yelsey?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I did have one comment. We did have some signs that came up missing, some 56. Political signs. And just so everybody here, we have our police department look into it. And, you know, there's no exceptions to the law. So if anybody thinks, I just wanted to mention that. And I'm not saying this is good. This shouldn't happen. Everybody pays money for that, and there should be respect for it. I just want to let you know, whatever our police department does, they're going to do. So, thank you, everybody. You have to get everything, folks. And I said,
that's the homeless. That's what Dick called.